Hi, and welcome to the best of Business Wars Daily. I'm David Brown. We're talking today about the biggest tech company in the world, Apple. It's a title that the brand has held for more than 10 years now, ever since it bypassed Microsoft in 2010 with growth fueled by the iPhone. Apple's smartphone sales account for roughly half of its annual revenue and have been helped along by the rollout of 5G-enabled products that get slicker with each update. We all know Apple has devoted fans. With every release, there's that telltale line outside its stores. But analysts predict that fans' patience could wear thin. And that's because there are major production slowdowns at Apple's main iPhone factories in Zhengzhou, China. Workers left their jobs over concerns about COVID outbreaks, and others protested the conditions and policies at those factories. The result of all that unrest is that consumers face the longest delays in the company's history. And while Apple reported revenue growth from the iPhone this fall, analysts are worried about the effects of these supply chain issues. Here to talk about all that is Wall Street Journal columnist Dan Gallagher and comedian Gianmarco Sorrese. We'll also look back at some of our stories from our sister show, Business Wars Daily, and look ahead to our next season, Apple versus Microsoft. Stick around for the best of Business Wars Daily. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is the best of Business Wars Daily. If you haven't checked out Business Wars Daily yet, that's where we get into more of the news from the business world. We're keeping an eye on trends, controversies, and of course, keeping you updated each and every day. We're chatting today about Apple, the tech behemoth that's worth more than $2 trillion. And I'm joined by Wall Street Journal columnist Dan Gallagher and comedian Gianmarco Sorrese, who hosts the podcast The Downside. Now, Gianmarco, you describe your podcast as a place where complaining is encouraged, negativity celebrated, and silver linings debunked. So cheery, Gianmarco. Tell us about The Downside.
Oh, I think we're all putting up a front all the time on social media, in person. And I like to create a safe space for people where they don't have to count their blessings. They can just complain and tell me what's on their heart and minds.
Yeah, I was thinking about that very idea this morning, and maybe the morning before that and the morning before that. So it sounds like you might have a terrific audience there. Dan, if you went on The Downside, what would you complain about right now?
I think I complain about uncomfortable earbuds.
Sorry about that, man. I mean, my gosh. What do you, Dan, how do you typically spend your days?
Well, Heard on the Street is a column for the journal that is like real-time market commentary. And so I essentially spend my days watching the market and watching my particular area is tech companies. So watching what companies like Apple do, Google, all the big ones, all the small ones, and then try to find interesting things to say about them that maybe other people aren't quite thinking of.
Gianmarco, are you sort of a news junkie or not so much?
I'm a big news junkie, but then I forget all of it. That's all I listen to all day. And then when someone asks me a question about some Supreme Court, I like tech news though. You know, I got the newest iPhone and it is glitching all over the place. So I'm complaining about that nonstop.
Well, I want to make sure I've got sort of a mental image of where you guys are. Gianmarco, where are you?
I am currently at a hotel room in Miami. This is not my normal abode. I'm just a touring stand-up comedian. Last weekend, I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So,
yeah, I've been there. Now, let me ask, what do you call home?
New York City. And I love New York. That's my, you know, people like to take shots at New York. I was in an Uber in Chattanooga. The Uber driver said, I heard New York is filled with crime. And I said, you know what I've heard about Chattanooga? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So.
Touche. Oh my gosh. Dan, I'm assuming that you spend most of your time in the city, no?
I'm in the West Coast. So I actually work in our San Francisco office. I'm currently in my house outside of San Francisco. I go to New York all the time, though. That's where our home office is, and I love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. How do you, by the way, since you do the column Heard on the Street, how are you hearing on the street if you're all the way in San Francisco?
Well, it's a new age where you can hear things everywhere.
Yeah. One of the things we're talking about today is smartphones, and I would imagine you get a lot of your tips through some of those devices. Dan, Gianmarco, are you an iPhone user? Are you the first in the line at the Apple Store, or do you shun such devices?
I'm iPhone from day one. From day one, I had the Shuffle. I had the iPod. Listen, all my friends with Androids, because I send voice memos now. That's what we do. We don't call. We don't text either. We just do voice memos. And when they have an Android, I can't send a voice memo. So I'm Team Apple.
Well, there is that. Dan, I know you cover Apple among other tech companies. Are you a loyalist to any particular brand?
I don't know if I'd call myself a loyalist, but I'm probably like most consumers out there in the sense that I use an iPhone, and that's pretty much what I've gone with for the, you know, in the modern smartphone age, because I think people, you know, people have gotten used to it. We're now more than 10 years into this thing, and people usually upgrade every 2-3 years. Most people don't switch, and you get accustomed to kind of a way a company does things, a way a device works. So, you know, yeah, I think the iPhone's a very good phone. There's other good phones out there, but it's what I'm used to, and I tend to stick with it.
That's the thing. I mean, I wonder how much of it is just familiarity, which is what you're sort of talking about here, Dan, or how much of it is being in an ecosystem with people who are somewhat like-minded, maybe friends and family and that sort of thing, and you don't have to, you know, reformat messages and all that kind of stuff. And I guess this sort of speaks to a larger strategy that Apple has had over the years. What do you think, Dan?
I think there's something to that. I mean, like Gianmarco just said, you know, he uses his device in a particular way that it's hard to do with people outside the iPhone ecosystem. Not everybody uses the device in that way. And actually, what's ironic is that if you want to switch between platforms, Apple and Android, it's easier to do that than ever, I think, because look at, if you go back in the early days of the iPhone when you had, you know, you would have had to move your library of music and photos over and do this big data transfer. And if you had bought your music from Apple, you couldn't have moved it anyway because it was proprietary to the Apple system. Now, you know, if you have music, it's probably Spotify. You just sign into a new account. Your photos can be synced with another type of cloud service. So it's easier to move, but few people do it. The market share numbers that I look at every year suggest people just don't switch because you just get, like I said, you get used to the way things work. And a lot of people get their devices through their employers too. And so you don't always have, a lot of times employers will say, here are the kind of devices you can pick. But for the most part, people, I think, just stick with what they're comfortable with.
You know, I think most people probably think that they've sort of got two choices. They've got the iPhone and they've got, even though there are other phones operating using the Android system, they often think of, I mean, Samsung comes immediately to top of mind for a lot of people. But there's a new phone company making headlines. It's called Nothing. That's actually the name, Nothing. The company founded in London in 2020 introduced its first phone, Phone One, and wireless earbuds called Ear One in July of this year. We covered Nothing on our sister show, Business Wars Daily. I want to take a listen to a recent clip. Nothing's big goal, though, goes beyond just making tech devices. It wants to create a whole ecosystem of interconnected products. More specifically, as CEO Carl Pei told The Verge, Nothing wants to, quote, create products with a singularly focused design language across everything from hardware to software, so that there could never be any confusion about them coming from another company, end quote. Given that a multitude of smartphones are already on the market, that's a tall order. But Pei says Nothing isn't squaring off with other Android phones in the market. It wants to take on Apple directly. Apple's ecosystem includes its own products, earbuds, phones, laptops, and the like, and it also partners with third-party vendors for things like its home security system. Nothing wants to do that too, make its own products and then bulk up its ecosystem by partnering with vendors. And while that all sounds great in theory, if Nothing can pull that off, it'd be nothing short of a miracle. Gianmarco, what do you make of Nothing? Had you even heard of this company before?
No, it sounds like a terrific door stopper. I think that's all I could possibly use it for. I'm sick of these names. The Nothing Phone, Phone One. How arrogant do you have to be to call yourself Phone One? You're Phone 10 billion at this point. Okay, so you're gonna need to come to the table with a lot more, because I got 20 iPhone chargers. Okay. And I, you're going to need something big to make the switch for me.
Yeah. Dan, that sounds awfully familiar. What are the hurdles for a company like Nothing?
They're huge. Nothing's an app name because, like, they're not in the US. So I haven't actually seen them, but I don't even hear people talk about them out here. And, like, historically, even in the US, most phones get distributed through the stores that wireless carriers run. The AT&T stores, the Verizon stores, and so forth. And so it takes a lot of infrastructure of a company to get devices into the market in a way that people will actually like see them and buy them, that store representatives will promote them. There's been really good phones in the past that have tried and still haven't. I mean, think of Google. Google's one of the most familiar brands in the world. They make their own phones called the Pixel. Those phones are very good phones. I've used a few, and they still get low single digit percent of the smartphone market, even with that a company as big as that and a brand as well known as that. So for somebody like Nothing, that which is coming from out of nowhere, I think they face a tremendous hurdle.
Nothing from out of nowhere. I like that. But, at the same time, we can be really myopic about where we are today. Not that long ago, I mean, some of us are old enough to remember that Nokia ruled the market when it came to smartphones. And the closest runner-up was a little company called Motorola, which has something of a history. You know, I'm wondering if the status quo sort of blinds us to potential trends. Gianmarco, I mean, one of those trends has been to try to pare things back. It seems like, you know, there is an appetite for that, no?
Maybe, but the user interface is going to have to be so much better. It's going to have to overcome how familiar I am with my user interface. Listen, the only way Nothing is going to get me on board is if they do that thing that iPhones did with the U2 album, but like with one of my stand-up specials. That's what I think we could simplify it to. We don't need random music. We need a phone, text, and my stand-up special shelf life.
Dan, what do you think it would take to topple the iPhone's hold, or for that matter, a company like Samsung? I mean, is it really that inconceivable?
It's not inconceivable if you look at the history of tech, but you have to come out with something that's such an advancement from what people are used to. You know, again, go back to the first iPhone. Which was pretty rudimentary compared to iPhones now. But when people saw that compared to the phones that they had in their pocket that had, you know, buttons and limited functionality, and all of a sudden you have this like touchscreen device that could surf the full internet, the selling proposition was there. It was leaps and bounds ahead of what people already had. And that was very clear. So I think phones like Samsung and iPhone and the current genre of smartphones has to be a new kind of thing and a new way of doing it that is a big leap forward. And so that's not inconceivable. It's just hard to know exactly what that leap is going to be right now.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about Apple. Not everything's peachy on the Apple front. We're going to be exploring its headaches in China as the best of Business Wars Daily moves forward. Stay with us. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome back to the Best of Business Wars Daily. With me are columnist Dan Gallagher and comedian Gianmarco Sorrese. We're talking about the most valuable company in the world, Apple. Dan, you recently wrote about Apple's issues in China, and I want to delve into that reporting. But before we do, let's talk about the fact that there's an entire city in China that's whole purpose is manufacturing the iPhone. Zhengzhou is also known as iPhone City.
Yeah, and apparently the last numbers I saw, there's like more than 1 million people who work there assembling the iPhone and some of Apple's other devices. It's enormous.
But there's been trouble in iPhone City, and Dan, you reported the issues, what, have an impact on wait times for the iPhone 14 Pro and Pro Max models. Tell us about that.
Well, it's part of the problem that's going across all of China. It's a mix of China was doing these very harsh lockdowns because of COVID, trying to limit the spread of the disease. And that has been, it's been very disruptive to people's lives there. And that started to spark these forms of protests that are really rare. You don't really see much in modern China. And in, as it relates to Apple's, ability to make the iPhone, some of these early protests sparked up right at the heart of the main assembly plants for these devices. So the way it's affected Apple is because this year Apple put out essentially 4 types of new iPhone, 4 versions of the iPhone 14. 2 of them are called the Pros, and the 2 don't have that Pro signature. The Pros are the ones that everybody wants. And the factory that mainly does the assembly of the Pros had these shutdowns that were related to the COVID lockdowns and then were disrupted by these protests. And so right now, people trying to order one of the iPhone Pro models here in the States would have had to wait until after Christmas and sometimes even into January to get one. And that's a big wait time, especially for this point in the iPhone cycle.
Yeah, well, nobody wants to get an IOU, under the Christmas tree or anything like that. Gianmarco, would you be up for that? I mean, are you ready to upgrade your iPhone or no?
Oh, well, let me tell you something. I'm holding right now in my hand. I got the new iPhone. I have the iPhone 14.
Wow.
I will never get an iPhone this early ever again. This thing, I've been having some glitches. There's all these issues. You know what? You don't want to be on the first trip to Mars. You know what I mean? You want to be on, after they had a little bit of time to work out the kinks. So I have the new iPhone. Next time I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait because there's a lot of stuff to figure out with each one of these models.
Yeah, but I think some of us have learned about that waiting game. I mean, you get that phone, right, and it's working. It's working until it doesn't. Apple has a way of bricking its own phones after a few upgrades. You ever notice that? You ever been caught on the raw end of that stick?
Absolutely. I'll just do what they tell me at this point. They own me. They own me. I consider them every time I budget for the new year. I take about a third of my income. I say, this is for Tim. And I just leave it at that.
He appreciates it.
Yeah, I bet he does. Dan, what are you running? Are you using one of the new iPhones or are you one of those that sort of jumps into the next iteration every time they come out?
I don't upgrade every year because I actually don't feel the need to. Every year they come out of the phone, there's usually some incremental improvements. But if you compare the devices each year, one new year doesn't really bring a huge jump in capabilities. So I upgrade about, for my personal use pattern, as frequently as I use it, I find a good iPhone lasts me about 2 years. So I tend to do it every other year. I have the iPhone 13 Pro right now. It's still working great. But you know, I'm sure probably next year, I'll probably need to move.
You know, I've been, one of the stories that I've been seeing a lot about is how Apple is trying to think about its next strategy beyond China. I mean, the company seems to know it has to break its reliance on Chinese factories and Chinese labor. But how is it doing that? Dan, do you have a sense of what the timeline might be, or is this all sort of talk given the geopolitical state of things?
Well, it's both. I mean, clearly they understand that they're very leveraged into China. And I think they're trying to kind of, how do you hedge that? But like we just talked about, you know, there's a whole city there making just iPhones. And then there's all their other products that are mostly made in China. So it's not going to happen fast at all. You know, they've got some manufacturing going on now in India. I think they're looking at Vietnam, and there's some components made in different places like that. But, you know, the simple answer is it's going to be a very long time. You know, I don't know if Apple has an intention to fully get out of China. If they did, that's going to be a very, very long time. I think mostly they just want to kind of spread their bets a little more. Even that's going to take a long time.
John Marco is a power user yourself, and I trust that you are. Does it matter to you where the iPhone is made? Should that be a yoke around Apple's neck or no?
You know, I think I've like many people, I hear about working conditions and I get concerned, and I would love to feel that my phone is being, I don't care where it's prepared, as long as it's being prepared under ethical working conditions. So when I rant at people about my socialist values, they can't point to my iPhone and call me a hypocrite.
Dan, how much of a factor is that? I mean, the idea that, you know, people are sort of getting cold to some of these products made in China because of the conditions, the working conditions there.
Well, I think there's legitimate things to worry about. Here's the problem, though. It's not just the iPhone. I think just China alone accounts for so much of the world's electronics manufacturing. And then you spread that to other countries where there might be other issues with like working conditions or civil rights and such. So I don't know if there's a way to get fully free of that, even if you left Apple completely. You know, I think every electronic device is going to have that kind of baggage.
But this almost seems bigger than Apple, because right now, you know, the semiconductor business is very much a part of the economy in Taiwan, for example. And now you're talking about a much greater geopolitical issue when the United States says, but we can't be completely reliant on chips made where they are being made. And there's a real push to bring that back to the U.S. Is it inconceivable that made in the U.S. of A could become a thing in the not too distant future? I mean, is it conceivable that you could ramp up to achieve the kinds of scales of economy that it would take to make an iPhone in the U.S. or somewhere? Or what do you think, Dan?
It's conceivable, but it's not going to be anything close to a near-term future. The chips alone you're talking about, the iPhone has so many chips inside of it. You know, right now you're talking about the main chip, the application processor that TSMC is going to start making some of in Arizona. And even that's going to count for a very small footprint, because these chip fabs alone take years to build. And then if you add in like other things required to make like an iPhone from scratch, you know, all the components, all the assembly, I've seen studies about how short the United States is in things like tooling engineers, you know, product tooling, the kind of equipment that makes stuff, and how many like China has relative to the US. So there's just maybe not quite all the knowledge base you need here to support something like that. That would take a long time. That's not just a matter of throwing up buildings and hiring a bunch of people. It takes years to develop that.
But the flip side of this is, you know, as we've seen in recent news reports from China, a lot of unrest this fall over COVID policies. And of course, we saw the demonstrations, you know, people holding up plain white pieces of paper, that sort of thing. And I think that spoke to some of the larger issues that are facing China right now as it tries to grow its economy in a post-peak pandemic world, I suppose. And I'm wondering where you see this headed, because this is bigger than Apple, clearly. Dan, what do you think?
I think we're going to see slowly a lot more companies trying to spread their, the term I used before, spread their bets. I think companies understand that it's not terribly healthy to have such a reliance on essentially another country with which, you know, and now there's all this friction between the US and China that makes that more complicated. So I think you're going to see a lot more companies other than just Apple figure out, okay, how do we hedge this risk, spread it, have more options to use. I think that's going to go on. It's going on now. But like I said before, it's going to be a slow process, and it's going to be years in the making.
John Marco, I know, I mean, as an Apple user, you pay a premium for that device. I mean, if all things being equal, would you pay a premium for a made in the USA phone as opposed to one brought over from China?
Well, it depends how publicly it's displayed on the phone which one it was made in. I feel like the social pressure could get me onto the good side. No, I think I would. You know, it's easy to say these things in theory, but I think I would, and then I would laud it over all my friends, because that's worth the extra money alone.
Tim Cook, note well. When we come back, move over Meta, a new player is entering the metaverse. That's as we continue with the best of Business Wars Daily. Stay with us. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com. We get support from Court. You know, the way people work is changing, and the workplace itself needs to change too. But what if flexibility wasn't just an option? With Court's flexible furniture solutions, you can create agile work environments that become your team's greatest advantage. Save capital with swing spaces, attract top talent with collaborative environments, and create connected spaces that employees will love. Flexibility is the future, and Court Furniture Rental helps you embrace it. Learn more at Court, that's CORT.com/office. Hey, welcome back. I'm talking with Wall Street Journal columnist Dan Gallagher and comedian John Marco Cerezi. We know Apple's not always the first to enter a new technology space. I mean, they were behind BlackBerry in the phone market, for starters. We cover that, of course, in our Business Wars series, BlackBerry versus iPhone. And they weren't the first to launch a tablet or a smartwatch either. But they do often blow the competition away when they develop new technology. And when it comes to the metaverse, well, Meta is quite literally the nominal force there, but Apple may be coming for it. Okay, let's listen to a clip from Business Wars Daily. While Meta stumbles in its quest to dominate the metaverse, it might want to look over its shoulder. Recent job postings by Apple suggest that company, too, is developing its own version of the metaverse. Back in 2021, it was reported that Apple was developing its own headset to be released in 2023, something to rival the Oculus Quest. And now it's looking for engineers who can build a 3D mixed reality world for this headset, according to Business Insider. One listed position for a senior software engineer said it was looking for someone with, quote, experience in 3D graphics and to drive building a simulation and synthetic data pipeline for machine learning training, end quote. Sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? Well, at production time, Apple hadn't responded to Business Insider's request for comment on the new job listings or exactly what it'd be doing with its new hires. But it's clear that Apple CEO Tim Cook is interested in augmented reality, telling a Dutch media outlet that it is, quote, a profound technology that will affect everything, end quote. Profound indeed, if a company can actually harness it. Gianmarco, I don't know, maybe I'm just way behind the times, but have you ever used a Meta headset?
No, I can't. I already used up my Apple budget for the year on this new iPhone. I can't imagine using it. Especially after COVID. I mean, I was doing Zoom shows and all sorts of things online. I'm ready to be in the real world for at least another year.
I totally hear you. I mean, I gather that maybe if you're a gamer, that maybe you have more experience with that and a desire to be in that sort of virtual space. Are you a gamer or is that not a thing for you either?
You know, I was as a child, and then I gave it up when I went to college, and I'm going to keep it that way. If I ever retire, that's what I'll do. I'll start gaming again.
Dan, what about you? Or have you ever put on one of those Meta headsets when you didn't have to for a story?
I've tried them in various settings. I've gone to several trade shows, trade events, game demonstrations. I've never bought a pair. I think here's the problem. There's a few problems. One is that there's some pretty cool games out there that you can use virtual reality headsets on, but it gets kind of tiring after a while, even if it's a really cool game. You know, just having that on your face and moving around, it's not something you can spend hours in, at least in my experience. And they look atrocious. there's been no VR AR headset I've seen yet that looks like something I'd want to wear or be seen wearing for that matter.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about this too, and I'm wondering if this seems to be sort of what I hear from everyone that I've talked to. It's like, really, why? I mean, this isn't something that I'm really hungering to experience. But then I think about Steve Jobs introducing that iPhone or the iPod, really, when you get right down to it, the iPod, the precursor to the iPhone, and thinking, really, really, Apple, you're going to invest in an MP3 player that I can go down to Walgreens and get for $14, right, with a little cheap headset? And of course, look what happened. I was the dope there. The iPod became a huge sensation and led to the iPhone. So I'm just sort of wondering, Gianmarco, is there anything that might be a tipping point for you? I mean, maybe some kind of experience or some kind of benefit that could sort of put you over the top with Meta or Apple's different variety.
You know, I perform a lot of stand-up comedy, and if they had something that when I looked out in the audience, it made it the seats be filled by my eyes, and the laughter came in from that too. Uh-huh. I could see that as a possibility, but otherwise, I don't think so. I spend most of my life telling people that I'm concerned about my addiction to the phone, my inability to concentrate, my need for dopamine kicks every once in a while. So if it goes to the point where it's constantly in my face, I get nervous what it's going to do to my ability to be human.
Well, I think that's a fair point. I mean, seriously, does anyone in your family, have they tried the metaverse stuff or this just a completely alien animal?
My brother, he's definitely a gamer and he hasn't either. He's fine with an old fashioned controller yelling curse words at probably 8-year-olds over an old-fashioned headset.
So what you're telling me is what I've heard just anecdotally for, you know, months now. Dan, what was Apple thinking, and are they already rethinking getting into this space? What's your sense of it?
I think they're considering it for sure. But here's a, I'll go back to your example of the iPod. I had the opposite experience. When I saw that first iPod, I wanted it because I had those cheap MP3 players that were terrible. And the main problem with the iPod, it was just a lot, it was expensive. It took me a while to save up to afford it at the time. So that, I think for a lot of people, it was a big selling point, especially once they launched the iTunes store and you could buy music for a dollar. So they kind of had a service to go with it. And once they had those things together, it just took off. The selling point was obvious. The metaverse doesn't have that. I think most people perceive it as, oh, this is going to be like VR games or, you know, playing around in virtual reality. And virtual reality just doesn't appeal to a lot of people right now for, I think, the reasons I've described. You know, the things look awful. They get tiring after a while. So, you know, Apple, they definitely have a touch for and a knack for being able to make something that looks good relative to what's out there and bring some new ideas to it. This is a tall order for them. You know, are they going to come up with something, a virtual reality or augmented reality headset that somebody actually wants to wear for and be seen wearing? That's a stretch.
But that, now you're making a point, though, that it's got me thinking. You know, Tesla succeeded not just because it had a car, but because they had a vision for an infrastructure that would support the car. You know, we're talking about these charging stations that, frankly, when they made the big announcement, we're going to have charging stations nationwide. I bet, you know, 2/3 of everyone who heard that announcement thought, yeah, right. You know, we'll believe it when we see it. So I'm wondering if using that model, which was similar to what you were describing with the iPod, where you have, you know, Apple Music at the time, I guess it was really iTunes, having their own store, right? That was kind of the tipping point for a lot of people who had bad experiences with MP3. I wonder if Apple couldn't sort of build out an infrastructure that gave people a sense of desire right out of the gate. Because as it stands, when I think of the metaverse, I don't know much of what to think of it except for sort of pixelated avatars and such. It just doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, that's the very point. Like, you have to have, I mean, the if you want to call it the metaverse or VR or something, still is looking for that killer app that makes a lot of people want to go into it and invest in the equipment to do it. I don't think we've seen that. Gaming, I think, is kind of a niche product for it. So can Apple do it? It's possible. I'm not going to never say never, especially with Apple. They have a strong history, but it's not going to be easy, really, because what is the metaverse even for is kind of like the basic question people still haven't really fully answered, I think.
Gianmarco, I have an idea now, thinking about what you suggested, where you can see a room full of people, right? A full house. And with apologies to Google Glasses, what about something like wearing glasses that are effectively like a wearable iPhone, where you can customize your own sensory experience? And, you know, who knows, maybe you have a little cheat sheet, some of your performance, you know, sort of scrolling on the left. Does that have any appeal for you?
Ooh, that sounds good. I'll tell you, I hate memorizing, and I got a lot of auditions too, so I can finally get out of stand-up comedy once and for all. And if you're talking to me about a portable teleprompter, that's a good sell. That's a good pitch.
Okay. Well, again, Tim Cook, we're talking to you. But the Google Glasses didn't really take off. And I wonder if that's because they weren't Ray-Ban enough. You know, they didn't have the style factor. Or if there's just something so, and getting back to your earlier point, Gianmarco, sort of fundamentally dehumanizing about the way that we're using technology. Dan, would you wear, you know, glasses that were basically like a wearable iPhone? You know, you can see the content, make calls, and get on with your day?
That's a good question. I have to see how they actually work. Here's another aspect to it that we haven't covered is these glasses are essentially going to be cameras. So you got the creepy aspect to it. You know, does Gianmarco want to be on stage having something that's filming his audience with that, you know, how does that change that dynamic? Or if you're on a date and you show up with, hey, I'm here to pick you up and I'm wearing that camera on my face. You know, it brings in, it really treads some new social ground that I don't think we've gotten our arms around yet.
Yeah. And I think that that's a real question for technology and technological innovation at this juncture. I mean, we've all reached a sort of comfort level when it comes to security, even though, as we are often reminded by technologists, we're giving up a lot of that privacy and security that we formerly enjoyed. And I wonder if we've just sort of reached that river's edge. People are going to give up this much, but no further. What do you think, Dan?
I think that people are definitely more aware of the trade-offs now that technology brings. I think social networking in particular has done that. You know, early days of Facebook, it's like, oh, cool, I'm reconnecting with people I went to high school with and so forth. And now people are worried about, oh, what does this do to our democracy and elections and privacy and safety? So I think new technologies from this point are going to come into a world that's like at least more aware of asking these kind of questions. And that's, it makes it an even higher hurdle, I think, to meet, other than just saying, wow, this is something new and cool.
Well, Gianmarco, let's blue sky this sucker. How do we get to that next wave of technology? What do you need? What do you want? And what can Apple do for you, Gianmarco?
Listen, I just want a massage chair. That's all I need. Give me an affordable massage chair. I think Silicon Valley, we're going to reach a breaking point where we find that the limit is humans' brains, and that the amount of distractions we're capable of and still enjoying other aspects of being human, that's where the breaking point's going to be. It's not going to be technology. It's going to be the raw technology, which is the people who are supposed to be enjoying it. So that's my prediction. And that's why I think Google Glass, which we all thought was so cool in theory, did not take off.
Dan, what's the final frontier, or the next frontier, maybe, as you see it? Are we looking at augmented reality? Are we talking about those glasses? What do you think? And how far off are we?
Well, I think it's definitely the next frontier in terms of that's what so many companies are working on. But I don't think anybody's really cracked the code yet for how to get this, like, get to attract a mass adoption, to get the masses into it. That Apple might, some other company we never heard of might be the one to come up with this. That's always possible in tech. But, you know, again, you have to, anything new you bring like that has to really offer something that's leaps and bounds ahead of what people have. And after 2 years of like being stuck at home on Zoom calls, do people really want to like invest in stuff to unplug from reality more and plug into virtual worlds more? That's a new factor to consider. Like I think Gianmarco said at the beginning, a lot of us are getting hungry to get back to something that feels more real. Yeah, and you can't really get around that right now, I think.
Well, as you wrap things up, I think you've touched on something that is sort of central that we haven't really discussed, and that is, what is Apple today? It obviously is a part of a lot of folks' lives. I mean, both of you use iPhones, and I presume that you're in that Apple ecosystem. I mean, once you've got the iPhone, a lot of people also have, you know, a MacBook or something to go along with it. And of course, the Apple Watch and all of that. But what is Apple? It used to be a personal computer. It used to be the Macintosh. And now I guess it's the iPhone. But also, it's an identity, isn't it? I mean, a lot of people genuinely feel pricked when, you know, somebody says something about the Android being better. I mean, we identify with these teams that we've sort of gotten on. And I'm wondering, how would you answer that? What is Apple other than a $1 billion company? Or is that all it is? Dan, what do you think?
Well, a small correction. There are a $2 trillion company.
Oh, forgive me. Forgive me. Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, it's okay. But that speaks to what they actually are. And I think Apple is kind of unique in the sense that they engender such a base of loyalty because they're really still about the only company doing what you might call a closed system. You know, they make the devices, they make the services that work on those devices, the app store that people get programs through. And you don't have that same thing you know, Android is an operating system, but there's a lot of different companies building on it. I don't think it engenders that same kind of loyalty. So Apple is very unique in that sense. And I think that's why, you know, they tend not to lose customers, you know, but you also, they're not cheap. They've never tried to be the cheapest player, you know, in any market they compete in. So I think they'll stay that way in the sense of trying to appeal to a bit of a higher end. And it's worked for them so far. I don't think that's going to really change that much.
John Marco, what is Apple to you? Is it, or is it just another company to you?
To me, Apple is about ease of use. I am technologically literate. I've grown up with the iPods from the beginning, but I know, or at least Apple has proven to me in the past, that when I pick up a new device, I will intuitively understand how most of the major functions work. And that's really what it gives me.
We've been talking all about Apple with John Marco Sorese, whose podcast is The Downside. John Marco, where can people find your tour date?
All my social media accounts, it's just my name, at John Marco Sorese. And I tell them at the beginning of every new episode of The Downside as well, which you can get anywhere you get your podcasts or watch it on YouTube.
And Dan Gallagher is with The Wall Street Journal. He's a columnist there. Dan, where can folks find you online and in black and white?
Well, you can find The Wall Street Journal still in a lot of places in the old dead tree version and WSJ.com. I write for the Herd on the Street column.
Dan, John Marco, thanks so much for joining us on the Best of Business Wars Daily. It's been great to say hello and to hear your perspectives on all this.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Apple fandom aside, the story of that company's rise to prominence in many ways echoes the rise of its chief rival, Microsoft. Each company launched by young visionary figures who never finished college, but who invested themselves so thoroughly in their respective products that their names became a kind of pop culture shorthand for high tech and the fortunes to be made in the once fast-growing field of personal computing. Now, of course, personal computers are part of everyday life. The story of Apple and Microsoft, as most of us know it, didn't start out as a rivalry. Far from it. Indeed, when Steve Jobs and his partner Stephen Wozniak started their computer company in that now legendary garage, they knew about a certain computer whiz named Bill Gates forging his own path to success, and they also knew they would need his help. But what started as a kind of distant partnership of sorts would turn sour, then bitter, and divide the fast-growing pool of personal computer users into two camps, and the world would never be quite the same again. Talk about your epic business battles. You won't want to miss Apple versus Microsoft, coming up on Business Wars. From Wondery, this is the Best of Business Wars Daily. I'm your host, David Brown. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor, produced by Emily Frost and Jess Yarmosky. Sound designed by Sergio Enriquez. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our senior managing producer is Tanja Thigpen. And our managing producer is Matt Gant. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.